It's Sunday, November.
Damn it. Hey, let me do it if you can't do it right. It's Sunday, December 10th, 2006. You're listening to the Dollar Bin, and it's a quiet Sunday afternoon.
And we're all very happy.
Oh, yeah, we have Brian and Flacco back today.
Yes.
How was your weekend?
Yes, that was, you can thank us later.
How was your weekend?
How was your wrestling match?
Yeah, it was terrible. It was the worst wrestling event I've ever been to.
Yeah, I think.
And not just because I went with Flacco and Johnny.
The best thing about it was eating Crystal Burgers in Augusta. That was that was the highlight of our fucking
onion squares.
I got a sweet t-shirt.
Yeah, you did. But we were definitely a part of the worst wrestling pay-per-view in history. All right, I guess we'll talk about comics. It's fine.
So what did y'all guys read this week?
Brian, why don't you go first?
JSA, number one, relaunching the title. Jeff Johns is at the helm again. Supposedly with some creative input from Alex Ross. He's going to continue to do some covers. And if you look at the last page, you certainly get Ross.
I think that was my favorite part of the book was the last page, the upcoming stuff. You know,
I'll say that was my favorite part.
I thought it was really interesting because it gives away plot.
I read off of Newsarama, they had a three-part interview with Jeff Johns, and he said that those four panels on that page are direct rips from issues that have already been done. Like, the first one is from the JSA-JLA crossover. It's a direct panel from the page. And it also gives away the member that hasn't been released yet from JLA. The second one is, I think, maybe issue 7 or something like that. And then the other two are direct panels. I mean, they're dealing with stuff from the Crisis, with the Earth 2 Superman.
Yeah,
he said that is Kingdom Come
Superman. Yeah, that
Superman.
Is Kingdom Come Superman.
So they're
Come
going
Superman.
Into Kingdom Come continuity, too, with Alex Ross.
Crazy talk.
So can you give me, a little brief history of JSA? Like, what's the difference between that and JLA?
JSA is basically the first...
The other one's a
society.
That clears it up.
JSA is supposedly the first big DC group of heroes started in World War II.
Yeah. In continuity, they were around in the 40s and 50s and stuff.
The way that DC is promoting them now and has somewhat in the past is that they're like a legacy in the DCU where they're kind of attached to everybody. Like, if you look like a character... Wildcat, who seems kind of a throwaway character, but his hook at this point is that anybody that wants to fight who's a hero in the DCU at some point or another has gone to him either to spar or to learn how to fight. I mean, Black Canary, Batman, Wonder Woman, Catwoman, all sorts of people like that have either wanted to spar with him or he actually taught them how to fight. That Flash and that Green Lantern are kind of the standard bearers for those names, even though nobody actually thinks of them as such in DCU history as far as the comics go. That's how they're
treated. JSA has always been real good as selling those guys as being important, and in continuity, the Justice League has been around for probably 10 years. So they're Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman don't have people named after them.
Right.
They don't have legacy heroes following them, and the JSA does. And I think those three main characters you were talking about also had their aging stop somehow, because I think Ted Knight, it might have been with Nexton and Zero Hour or whatever.
Not necessarily. I don't think they got, at one point they got all de-aged, and then DC erased whatever storyline that was, and there's some sort of magic quantity that has rapidly slowed their aging, but they kind of play Green Lantern and Wildcat and the Flash as if they are very advanced in age, but their powers, their abilities make them still able to function at that level.
I'm down with it. It's just I was a really big fan of the last incarnation of the JSA that got canceled by Jeff Johns, mainly because I was such a big fan of Starman. He was always the hook that got me into the original JSA. But I stayed because it was good stuff. Dr. Midnight, Mr. Terrific, those are awesome additions to the DC Universe. And it'll be interesting to see where they go from there. I'm not really digging the new Starman just because I like the other one so much. But that's one small complaint. So
even more the hook now is that they have kind of decided that they're going to trace lineage as much as they can and try to get as many people involved with the team that is a hero that has connections to them or to other heroes that have connections to society and bring them into the fold. I mean, this book is going to have 20 regular members. Something of that nature.
Okay.
I mean, I basically read it because I felt like I had to read it because it was JSA, and I've never read anything by JSA, but it just seemed like one of those something that a serious comic book reader should read.
Yeah.
I wasn't pulled into it, and you know, the first JLA I read, I wasn't pulled into either, but the second one I read, I like, so I'm going to give this one another shot.
I actually don't disagree with you at all. I think people that are real rabid DC fans, like big DC fans, JSA is a book. I mean, look who's writing it. Jeff Johns is like the ultimate fanboy writer at DC at this point. I think JSA is a textbook fanboy comic. I mean, like, again, look what they're delving into. They're going to have a crossover with the Justice League, which is old school from when we were kids. They used to have to do that every year. And they're doing stuff with Kingdom Come. I mean, you can't get any more fanboy than that.
I also like the fact that Obsidian is, like, guarding the museum. I just thought that was a sweet little touch that just makes it, like, even cooler. He's not really a member. He just guards the museum. That's pretty sweet. I'll tell you what I read that just fucking rocked, man. And that was Warren Ellis's New Universal. And which is sort of a retelling of, I think in the mid-80s, Marvel put out a series of comics called The New Universe, which was attempting to be a comic book universe that had, it was set a little bit more grounded in reality, so the main characters that had powers were like really the only ones that had powers in the whole world or whatever, as opposed to like hundreds and thousands of characters in the Marvel Universe or whatever. The point is it all failed miserably, and Warren Ellis saw that stuff, read it all, and then saw some sort of like kind of like plot thread that like tied it all together that really wasn't addressed at all, and so he's just doing this one thing, and you do not have to have read any of that stuff. I mean, it makes it slightly cooler kind of knowing like who these characters are going to become just in name, really. Only there's a character named Starbrand. I recognize the character that's going to be Starbrand. There's a character named Justice. I recognize a character that's going to be Justice. I think I recognized one of the other characters, but the bottom line is for a first issue that like Adam was just talking about not being sucked into like characters that have had like 50 years of continuity. I mean, this is an issue that has like characters that you never, you know, essentially they're all new, you've never met them before, and by the end of the issue you're just like, damn, man. The end of the stuff with the Starbrand character, the blonde kid, in like four panels Warren Ellis made me care about what happened to that guy and, you know, the consequences of like what happens to him, and it sucks, man. It was real cool, really heartbreaking, really shocking. New Universal is just Warren Ellis being Warren Ellis, and that's always good for comics. And also Salvador La Rocha is doing the best work of his career. Good Lord, please stay away from that like pseudo Japanese manga style that Salvador La Rocha used to have on like the X-Men that just made me want to puke. But this is just like, I'm really trying to like be a craftsman here, and Warren Ellis brings out the best in him. So,
and yeah, I thought it was a really good story. Again, I know nothing of these characters, and it did pull me right in as a number one. Also, what I read that pulled me in as a number one, and then pulled me further in as a number two about another character I didn't know anything about because I haven't read any of the other stuff, is Midnighter number two, which came out last week, and I thought it was amazing.
Oh, dude, between New Universal and Midnighter, those were two of the best books that came out last week.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I never read any of that stuff, any of the Authority stuff. I mean, I haven't
read
vague knowledge of Midnighter and Authority, one, you know, from reading about one. Them, but I haven't ever read those books.
Right.
Both of those issues have been real kick you in the teeth, keep it going.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is what I thought, you know, this is how I've always, you know, this is the Authority to me. You know, the stuff that's going on in Midnighter is like the way the Authority wrote, like, think big, think crazy, and, you know, be hardcore about it, you know, and like, and the premise of Midnighter number two is so like goofball. He goes back in time to kill Hitler, and it just seems like
kill Hitler before he's Hitler.
Right. But it's just like it's such a cliche kind of goofball Hitler. Time travel story, but it's like it's not handled that way in the slightest bit. Mind, you know, it's not handled as being goofball, it's not handled as being funny.
Well, I think it's funny, but
the Midnighter understands the absurdity of this situation. You know what I mean? But like
I'd like to present Midnighter number two as the comic that I read last week. That's fine. No, I was gonna say the same thing about it being we talked about it earlier. You can tell that it's really goofy, and that Midnighter understands how goofy of a situation he's in, but he's still very serious about it, even though he realizes, and we realize it as readers, and we can tell, and it's just written amazingly.
I think that character's supposed to be like a playoff on Batman. Now.
Really?
I think one thing that works best, one thing that our writers who get Batman understand, is that Batman's in some really stupid situations, but he stays serious. And I agree with y'all. I think that's what's good about that character in this, is he's in a completely ridiculous, over the top of anything situation.
It's like he's serious.
Fuck it, I have to do it. Yeah. So here we go.
It's like he's serious, but he's also hilarious. Like he's like trapped to that thing. He's like, I just want to let you know, I'm gonna kill each and every one of you, and I'm gonna do it in the most horrible way. And that asshole back there, I'm gonna save for last and do it real slow.
And he's not doing it being funny.
Go ahead.
Even though it's completely ridiculous.
And it's hilarious. Yes. Yes. Great. Great
I guess book. I could have talked about something different. But
now's your chance, Adam.
You want me to go again?
Yeah, do it.
All right, I'll talk about something that you guys aren't going to talk about.
Okay.
Ninja Scroll number 3.
Yes, you're wrong.
Take it away.
Wildstorm, Ninja Scroll number 3. Talked about this a little bit last week and how disappointed I kind of am. And really, just Ninja Scroll, the movie itself, is so much to live up to. And with this series, I was hoping to get a little something out of it. I was excited about the series.
But is this, let me ask something. Is this like new stuff or is this like a retelling?
No, it's definitely new stuff. Oh, it takes place after the movie. It brought back a lot of weird characters. It was only a 3-parter because this one says the end at the end of it. So I'm assuming it doesn't go any further than this. And I hope it doesn't because I thought it was just a useless, worthless, pointless story that should just never have been written. Raise us back up, somebody.
Chris, what did you read last week?
Well, I read The Preacher, number 1 and number 2.
That's right.
Yeah, I bought the trade. I didn't buy any monthly, but I'm calling them. Comics.
Okay.
Do you want me to talk about The Preacher since it's...
it's new to you. What's your feeling on it?
Well, Preacher's great. I love it. Flocka recommended it. It was between that and a couple other trades.
Going to be an HBO miniseries.
Yes, right. It will, and I hope it's good. I hope it's real good. Didn't you say who was directing that?
I believe in the guy that did Daredevil.
Mark Steven Johnson behind the adaptation. I think that scares everyone a little bit. Frightens us all.
Something else that was really good this week was Detective Comics 826.
I missed that one, but I do look forward to it.
Yes, you should definitely read it. It gets back to, like, you were disappointed in last month's Detective.
Yeah, I was. That's why I didn't read this one yet.
Turned it back around to having a really good solo story. Basically, it's just the Joker and Robin in a car for some fun.
What the cover looks like.
Yeah. It is not misleading. I thought it was a great single issue.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff for that Robin. Good stuff for that Joker.
I also like to see Paul Dini a little bit more hardcore than he can be in, like, the, you know, animated series. Because, you know, you ain't going to shoot no one in the face in the animated series.
And
you know
running
what I mean?
Over
right.
You know,
oh,
like
yeah.
12 people.
Yeah, dude,
like
that was hilarious, man.
Because, like, in the animated series, you always get the, at least I always got that, man, what they would really like to do with this Joker character is not what TV censors will allow them to do. Because, like, he gets right up to the point of being the Joker in the comics, and then, like, all right, kids, we can't do that. But this is a little more version of how he's, his version of the Joker, which I think is spot on.
Let me think.
I do have another thing I'd like to cover.
Sure, go ahead.
The Confidentials. I want to talk about those real quick. I'll start off with Batman Confidential. I was very disappointed in it.
Lame.
I was kind of looking forward to it.
Story,
because
art,
I thought both. I don't like the style. I don't like the art style. I don't think that his Bruce Wayne is the Bruce Wayne that should be Bruce Wayne. I think he drew him kind of bad. And it looked like he kind of was lazy sometimes about some of his art style, but maybe it's just the style and I don't dig it. It's boxy, very boxy style.
It's Wiltz Portacio being Wiltz Portacio.
And just the story wasn't very good. And I was really excited because I really liked that Superman Confidential, that number 1. And then I read number 2, which was even more amazing than number 1.
Yeah, number 2 was even better than the first issue.
Because number 1, really I thought the coolest thing about number 1 is it had that old-time feel with, like, a new story to me.
Yeah.
And the number 2 is just a great story. It does great, great promotion. Did you read it, Brian?
That would be buying 3 Superman comics a month, and that's just too much for
well,
me.
I mean, it's I buy action, you know, and I buy this, and that's it. That's all I buy.
I mean, I buy JLA, action. I guess I'm counting
what about All-Star, man?
All-Star Superman, even though it doesn't come out ever.
Yeah, it's true. I do read All-Star, too.
All-Star
that's
action.
Just, that's just Superman Overload and JLA.
So. Well, you know, it's Superman Overload, but you're getting 3 different things from all 3 of these comics.
I picked up 5 Batman comics.
I don't like him.
Well, have you liked what you've been reading? Have you liked the All-Star? Have you liked the action?
I think action has been good.
Uh-huh.
I'm more interested in it than I think, oh, this is the Superman. Like, somebody described it as Superman that they wanted to read. I don't really want to read anything about Superman other than him.
I've never been interested in Superman at all. I've never, except for, you know.
No, I mean for good.
Oh.
But but I mean, it's been interesting. All-Star Superman is just a great book. If that could be any character, and if it was written and drawn like that, I would buy it.
Well, I think that Superman Confidential has a wide range of emotion in it, and I think just seeing Superman with a pouty face, like Clark Kent, sad.
I love
just
that
really, really good.
I love
it. It's really, it gives it a real good, just wow.
I know I've already said this.
Pull me in feel.
About Superman.
Human, very human feel. You know?
Yeah, I know I've already said this about Superman Confidential, but the best thing about it is that it's during a period of time, which also Batman Confidential is pretty much the same thing, which is like these guys are just sort of the very beginning of their careers. With Superman Confidential especially, they do a lot better job of it. But just, you know, he's not sure how far he can take his powers. He's not sure what'll kill him. He's not sure, you know.
Isn't he already dating Lois as Superman and Clark Kent? But is that the beginning of his
career?
It's
the very beginning of their relationship, too. You know what I mean? Like, they still have yet to have, like, a first date, a real first date or anything like that. But, I mean, it's, like, he doesn't know how much, what can kill him, you know?
The Eiffel Tower?
What's that?
They're having dinner on top of the
wine or
tower.
Something. Candlelit.
Oh. Well, they're at the very beginning of their
That's
relationship.
They're at the very beginning of the
No. I'm just saying they're at the very beginning
Smelling
of their
continuity
relationship.
Continuity issues already.
Right. Yeah. Y'all calm down.
My God.
Give me Dan Daniel on the phone.
But I did like that. Eagles. I will be picking up the Superman Confidential number 3, but I don't think I'll be picking up Batman number 2.
I might give that a look.
Reading? Also, right quick.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Fantagraphics put out a book called Delphine. Which was it's an oversized format, and it's a great book. It's about a guy who meets a girl in at college, and while they're at college, they have a connection really quickly, and almost immediately she has to leave for the summer break, but he wants to like hang out with her some, and she leaves, and he follows her to this town. The town that she lives in is like very strange, and very weird. And there's just lots of crazy stuff going on. And I'm looking at my man, Wee, and he's looking good. And the whole book was just sick.
It's a different show.
Yeah. The whole book was just really good. Delphine, keep an eye out for it, man, because it was great. It was great. Richard Sala, I believe, is the name of the guy that wrote and drew it.
Does Wee want
to
talk?
Yeah, Wee, what do you got to say, man? Did you read anything last week? I didn't even see you last week, man.
Well, that's why I'm here to pick things up.
Sweet.
What are you picking up?
I hope I can pick up 52. I just read 52, week 31. Very exciting.
Was that the Batman one?
No, that's the one where this new world that they created gets taken over by Lady Six.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Have you been reading for 52 pretty much every week?
Yeah, I follow it
religiously.
Yes, it's nice to see Captain Comet. He has a new ability to eject his consciousness.
Yeah, and you know, he needed it by the end of that issue, huh?
But yeah, it's really really bloody.
I mean,
yeah.
Isn't that the guy that's on like the dissecting table or something like
right,
that?
Right, yeah.
His chest chopped off. And that Lady Styx is like eating the Green Lantern ring.
Yeah, that was real cool, man. Who the hell is she, man?
Because
she's in something. There's a mystery. Random lanterns were sent. Yeah. Like they sent there, whatever. I don't know. But the point is, there's a mystery in space comic that's like set in continuity, you know, in 52 is a year ago or whatever. But in continuity, it still has to do with Captain Comet and Lady Styx.
Yeah, I mean.
It's weird.
Isn't she part of the whole seven soldiers ordeal? Or
that's somebody else. Yeah, okay. that's a lady that looks like her. But I know who you're talking about, but it's not her.
Have you been enjoying 52 pretty much every week?
I mean, it's written by Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, two of my most favorite writers right now.
Yeah. I don't know, I feel like sometimes that book disappoints. Like, I guess it just depends on the storyline that's following. But sometimes, like, the Ralph Dibny stuff, I can kind of take it or leave it. Although in that issue, it was actually pretty cool, the stuff with Supernova, which was pretty much, like, the most interesting thing I've read in a bit. Because, you know, that he knows who Supernova is.
Dibny does?
Yeah, Dibny knows. And
yeah,
like,
he's one of the greatest detectives in the DC universe.
Yeah, so, like, he's like, he goes, pretty much reveals who he is without actually saying his name.
So
and
you
then,
guys
like,
figured it out?
No. I have no idea who it is.
There's like a clue that it might be two people working together. So because like one person can fly,
what are you thinking,
and
we?
One person. I mean, maybe they'll bring back the Wonder Twins.
Wow!
Yes,
it's a good guess.
That or
they have Marvin and Wendy and Teen Titans.
What yeah, up? Exactly. So
if you had to put money on the table right now, who do you think Supernova is?
I was reading somewhere that they're bringing back Firestorm, the original Firestorm. What's his name?
I don't know.
Powers, Ron Raymond.
Yeah,
those powers kind of fit.
And then he might merge with another character. I think it's somebody, but. It's yeah. They bring back the original Firestorm, and then he merges with somebody to create Supernova.
Interesting.
Maybe?
So. I think it's Booster.
I think it's Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I think it's Booster. You think it's Lex? Really?
Yeah.
Which Booster are you talking? Are you talking about the ancestor or the original?
The original.
Okay.
I think he faked his death all of it. I think he wanted to restart, and he thought that was the only way he could do it.
I think Lex Luthor is living out his Superman fantasy with borrowed powers that he can turn on and off.
That would be as
storyline.
Which means like that? Won't happen.
You like that shit, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Brian, you got anything else to say?
Uncanny X-Men, their continuing little road trip to Shi'ar. I understand it's supposed to be a long storyline. I really like Ed Brubaker. It's starting to really drag for me. One of the things kind of struck me as funny about reading the issue, which is why I wanted to say something about it, is on the cover you see Professor X strapped to this contraption, and in the issue he is indeed in that contraption and gets messed up and tortured and that kind of stuff. And my thought process about it was, who gives a crap if he gets messed up anymore? I mean, he's pretty much been exposed as kind of a backstabbing scumbag at this point in the comics, so why am I supposed to care that he's getting tortured? And when that's...
Maybe they did that to kind of pull you back in to caring.
Maybe they want me to care.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Warpath's still pretty cool, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I really like the characters. Like, I like Rachel Summers, I like Nightcrawler, I like Warpath. It's just really not doing anything for me.
I like Warpath, and I like Nightcrawler, and everyone else can die.
Wow.
Seriously.
You are such a meanie.
No, man. That is not a good team of Uncanny X-Men. That is not a good team.
Really good friends with the Scarlet Witch.
No good. No good.
What about you? You read anything Marvel this week, Blanca?
Yes. Another thing I read was Spider-Man Reign by Kari Andrews, which apparently he has been
I read that.
Out of comics for 3 years and has been working on Spider-Man Reign. It's sort of been his sort of pet project.
Yeah, this is what's been building for quite some time.
He did a bunch of like Hulk covers that were great.
Like one was like a ripoff of what's that kid's?
Where the Wild Things
Are. Yeah, Where the Wild Things Are. It's like a Hulk cover that looked like the artwork from that. I was like, whoa, what is that?
Yeah, he's great. He's really good, like graphic designer.
Yeah, it was like a crazy cover.
Yeah, I was really excited when I heard about Spider-Man Reign, and I didn't know anything about it. And it turns out
it took place way later.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I didn't know that it was set out of continuity. I didn't know anything. But it turns out that it's actually the most depressing Spider-Man story you'll ever read in your life. Essentially,
until
imagine
the end,
Spider-Man always being a loser and, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, even when he's 80 years old, he still, like, doesn't really have a place to live or, like, can't pay rent.
And all his friends are gone.
He will never, ever, ever, you know, get a break. Yeah. And the book focuses on essentially like an 80-year-old Spider-Man.
I read an interview with him about the story, and I guess the interviewer was basically pointing that they were trying to make this be Spider-Man's Dark Knight Returns.
That's exactly what I said. And
it's just not
good. It's not a good Dark Knight Returns.
I'm going to read the next one.
The whole thing just seemed like, very like at the beginning of the issue, he's like ridiculously frail and like his bones.
I'm gonna go read it now while we're on the podcast.
And then at the end of it, he's like back as Spider-Man and like, you know, acting like Spider-Man. It's just really weird.
Yeah, but there's a reason he's acting like Spider-Man in the end.
Oh yeah, the whatever. I don't.
Well, don't give it away.
I'm not gonna.
Either way, it's just. I was very disappointed.
Brian, you can go read it while we're doing our discussion.
I will definitely not be buying the rest of them, but.
I was just really disappointed
in the first issue of Spider-Man Reign.
So it took.
I wasn't disappointed because I didn't expect anything from it.
3 years to disappoint the hell out of me.
It didn't disappoint the hell out of you. You just didn't want to see a frail old Spider-Man wiener.
I didn't pick up on the wiener until it was pointed out later. But Spider-Man Reign was a huge disappointment.
Are you going to read the second one?
Especially because it covers awesome.
It was a huge disappointment because it was depressing.
It was just a huge disappointment because it felt like a little bit, you know, it felt like it was trying to be something that Spider-Man isn't. Felt like it really
I thought it was unrealistic,
and that is not the character of Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
Did it have any of his humor?
No.
I think it's going to show as the end does. Man. The end. It starts.
He's crazy.
To show some of his, he's crazy.
And I'm pretty sure, like, he's.
I don't know. I mean, then again,
I can't tell you about stuff.
Right. If it was an 80-year-old guy beaten down by life, wouldn't you eventually lose your humor?
Yeah, but who the hell wants to read that Spider-Man?
You did.
Well, he didn't want to.
I was tricked.
You know, I do think that the future of Spider-Man living in an apartment and being sad and lonely is, I don't see that happening.
Like, I don't think it's a realistic future. I like the idea that Spider-Man will never catch a break. I like the idea that 80 years old, he'll still be like, the responsibility of being Spider-Man will still always like keep him from like ever achieving like real happiness.
You just don't like the fact that they've taken the people out of his life, I guess?
Well, I just don't like the fact that like he's no longer, I mean, he's, you know, at the beginning of this, he's already given up being Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Like, life has beaten him down.
He's got arthritis.
And defeated him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't like that idea. I like the idea that Spider-Man will always keep fighting
always. Let life beat you. You know what I'm saying? He'll always keep fucking trying, you know? And that's the beauty of Spider-Man. And it, that is.
But there's four issues, right?
Right, right. Okay. You know, it might so turn around, but first issue was just real disappointing.
Chris, did you read anything that can bring us up from this sad, depressing Spider-Man?
Yeah, I read this, started this great series about heaven and hell, you know, damnation, vampires, preacher.
Oh.
Yeah. But haven't you already said that, Chris? You didn't read any new comics this week, Chris?
That's not a new comic, Chris.
No, it's not. It's a trade. I bought a trade. I didn't buy any monthlies. I was thinking of like just collecting trades and just waiting for stories to, you know, come out a few weeks after the story arc has ended.
I mean, do you think that all those stories that you want to read are going to come out on trade?
I think so, because they have in the past, because
you know who's responsible for all those trades existing in the Marvel universe? I believe who you have to thank for trades in Marvel is Joe Quesada.
I believe it is. It is.
Joe Quesada is responsible for trades in Marvel.
Took over the reins of Marvel back in 2000.
But is he responsible for the ads too? Let's talk about it.
Tonight on the Dollar Bin.
Oh man, tonight we're going to talk about our good friend Joe Quesada. Everything he's done and hasn't done for comics.
The good, and the bad.
I guess Joe Quesada started as
wonder how this will be slanted.
As a penciler. Just drawing comics. He started off as, I think, the Ray for DC Comics was the first thing he ever did. And he co-created Azrael with Denny O'Neill, and he did some X-Factor, some stuff for Valiant, X-O Manowar, and Ninjak. Ninjak was really the first place I ever became aware of who Joe Quesada was. And
Daredevil is where I became aware of.
Yeah, I was always a fan, you know, like, you know.
Became aware of who he was when he became Marvel's editor-in-chief.
Yeah, the X-O Manowar stuff, I dug that stuff. I've always liked Joe Quesada as an artist. And in 1998, well, he had been publishing his own stuff at the time at Event Comics, a comic book called Ash, about a firefighter with superpowers. And in 1998, he got contracted by Marvel to do some books for them, sort of like overseeing a small line of books that they called Marvel Knights. All that stuff was, I think, specifically geared a bit more towards an adult audience, you know, and it was really
this is a more mature thing. Is
wanted to bring some edge to Marvel.
Yeah, and the first thing he did, like pretty much right out of the box, was hire Kevin Smith to write Daredevil, which was really just, I mean, this was immediately after Bob Harris. Actually, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but the stuff that came out in the Marvel Knights books were like Daredevil, Black Panther, Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee's. Well, Black Panther's written by Christopher Priest and drawn by Mark Teixeira. The best run of Black Panther in the history of comic books. Inhumans by Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee, which was just an amazing, amazing story. Something that, like, I don't think Paul Jenkins has ever been able to live up to, man. It was so good. That first issue of the Inhumans was great. Do you remember that? The whole issue was all about Black Bolt and
all of the initial Marvel Knight stuff was all home runs except for the Punisher stuff.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Not all of it sold like home runs, but all of it creatively was very good, except for
the Punisher stuff was garbage. It was like Tom Signoski and Bernie Wrightson, and Punisher was like an undead Avenger. He like come back. He was a zombie from the grave with like ghost guns and shit. And it was real lame.
He was Ghost Rider.
Yeah, yeah. And he had like a glowing skull on his head. And his eyes glowed.
It was really lame.
Awful. Everybody hated it. So immediately the guy like grabs the creative team on Preacher, Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon, and they do the Welcome Back Frank storyline, and that pretty much like, you know, brings Punisher back. And once again they have another great book. And Marvel Knights books.
Punisher has been creatively the best it's ever been ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just got better and better and better. And I think at the time, Bob Harris was running Marvel and was just doing a lot of things. Marvel was essentially bankrupt, and they had just been doing all kinds of lame, gimmicky things. One of the things Bob Harris had done was he stopped the numbering of all of Marvel's books and started everything at a number one.
Yeah.
Essentially because his theory was that number one sell more and you can get more people in the books and stuff like that. And
so he's responsible for all, like everything was a collector's issue.
Bob
Harris is.
Yeah. Harris.
Everything
kinda,
was in
you know,
a bag when you bought it, and you're like, do I open it? Do I not? I don't know what to do.
Shiny,
so
fancy covers. But at that point, I mean, I'm certainly not coming to Bob Harris's defense, but at that point, Marvel as an entire company was basically struggling for air.
Right.
I mean, they
were
selling off characters and rights to characters, anything to stay afloat.
With one notable exception, which was the Marvel Knights line, which was the Joe Quesada inspired, you know, Marvel Knights line. Now, you know, I think Joey Palmiotti had like a lot to do with it too, as Joey.
Palmiotti was a parliamentary.
I don't even think it's Joe. What's his first name?
We apologize, whoever you are.
Jimmy.
Yeah, it is Jimmy.
Yeah, I think those two guys were kind of like the heads of whatever. And then not long after that, Bob Harris left Marvel and Bill Jamis became the new president of Marvel Comics. And he named Joe Quesada as editor-in-chief of all of Marvel Comics. In a short period of time, I think the first big thing that they did was they started the Ultimate line of books, which was set out of regular Marvel continuity. And I think everyone was a little bit scared at first. You know, I think Ultimate Spider-Man was all the Ultimate books were a big risk, you know, when they first came out, and no one knew what to do with them. And thankfully he was smart enough to get, you know, Brian Michael Bendis and as solid a craftsman as there is, and Mark Bagley to draw it, and they put out and continue to put out the best Spider-Man comic in the market today. And the Ultimate books just took off from there, and they also became a huge success. And you know, it was just another thing on Joe Quesada's, you know, list of things he's doing right. And
but we do need to note that that is not the only thing that, of course, launched Marvel out of bankruptcy, and they had X-Men and Spider-Man movie franchises.
Right, yeah, A.V. Arad had a lot to do with that stuff as far as...
Which money-wise was, you know, what really lifted the company.
At the time, you know, maybe so, maybe like the money they were making gave them like a little bit more... I mean, if anything, it gave them a little bit more of a creative license, you know what I mean? They can do a little bit more, and, you know, they could take some more risks, and Joe Quesada was great about doing that, great about like taking risks. And
I don't argue that the comics got better because Marvel creatively was in as big a slump, you could say, as they were financially before Quesada started with the Marvel Knights and before he took over as editor-in-chief. But financially, you can't throw all that on his back, because financially what really lifted that comic book, really lifted the company out of bankruptcy, was the movies. The comics got better, and they're currently the biggest comic publisher today. Yeah. So I don't give them any disrespect or discredit for that, but the movies is why they're not bankrupt.
You're absolutely discrediting them. I mean, I think saying that the movies are, I mean, they may have brought people to comics, but what kept them there was, you know, that the comics were great. And that's Joe Quesada. The reason that the comics sell more money now is because Joe Quesada's vision helped move them all forward.
The reason why the company is not in bankruptcy was because the movies lifted it. I didn't say anything about the comic publishing. If those movies would not have made that money, the company would not be where it's at. That's easily definable.
Well, soon after, Bill Jamis got told to take a hike, and essentially Joe Quesada had the run of the place. Pretty much has ever since, in the years that since that's happened. I think that was around 2000 that he became editor-in-chief.
He is the face of Marvel Comics.
First ever Hispanic editor-in-chief, as Chris is happy to point out. And that's muy bueno, coming from Puerto Rican powerhouse. And I'm down with my peeps. I'm telling the white man what to do. It's good stuff. Nice to have the power for change.
That's your new wrestling name.
Yeah, Joe Quesada, in addition to launching the Ultimate line, he also launched the Max titles, which I happen to think are great.
Punisher Max?
Yep, Punisher Max.
I think Punisher Max is the only Max title I've ever read.
Is it the only one still being published?
No.
What else is in Max?
Hellstorm is a Max comic. Zombie is a Max comic. Cage was a Max comic.
They have stuff out.
Alias was a Max comic. Yeah, and the commercial success of the Max stuff has been kind of like not as overwhelming as everything else, but as far as like opening up a whole new playground for, you know, artists. I mean, it doesn't seem like too many guys are taking them up on it, but it's also at, you know, in the exact same.
I think it's great.
Squadron Supreme was the last thing that was a Marvel Max book, and that actually left Marvel Max to try to be, you know, more financially viable or whatever. But
I think Marvel Max was a great move. I think a company like that needs something like a Max line.
Marvel is just sort of Joe Quesada has been the head of Marvel for some pretty controversial stuff in the past couple of years, creatively speaking.
And very successful times.
Yeah, absolutely, man. From everything from bringing Grant Morrison in to, you know, relaunch the X-Men stuff, to bringing in Joss Whedon to relaunch the X-Men stuff, to destroying, you know, Avengers, you know, lore by killing, you know, some of the most popular characters in history. And it, oddly enough, that stuff was still successful, still like financially, you know, hugely successful. I think
stuff like that is controversy creates cash. So people want to have things that they're going to, I mean, to a certain extent, people want to have things that they're going to read that they're going to have a problem with. And Joey Q certainly knows how to poke the fanboys, and certainly, and Brian Michael Bendis does as well. So I think when you have issues like that where they're going to have have problems and there's going to be issues and there's drama and controversy. That's the kind of stuff that brings people to where I need to read that. You know, I need to see what's going on kind of a vibe. And I think both of them do that very well. If you want to approach it from three sides, you have business, fanboy, or your client base, I guess, and then your workforce, which would be creator. I think he is very much a creator-based editor-in-chief. I mean, that's where he came from. That's where his friends are. I don't think that he completely discounts the other two.
Right.
But in his behavior, his comments, and his actions, I think you can clearly see he's coming at it from the creator standpoint.
Rightly so. I'm happy to hear.
Well, I mean, is that a bad thing?
No. I'm right.
I mean, what are the downsides of that?
Yeah, tell us, Brian. Tell us what the downsides to, like, really caring about comics first.
Really caring about... So anybody that's a fan of comics doesn't care about comics first?
No, I'm saying that, like, creators shouldn't be, like, bridled by, like, fanboy expectations. No, I don't think that at all.
Even though that's how they get paid and that's how
they get paid because you can piss off a fanboy and they'll still buy your book. You know what I mean? I mean, they're going to be there.
Because they're going to want issue 131 of whatever they're reading.
Anyway, if you want to look at him being a creator base and it having some problems, you mentioned the coup that he had to have Kevin Smith on Daredevil. Well, that one certainly turned into a shitstorm against him when they released...
Not on Daredevil.
On Daredevil 2, he has Daredevil Target that's still never been finished. He signed up Kevin Smith to do two miniseries, one called Spider-Man Black Cat with the Dodsons. It was a two-year odyssey to get the complete miniseries released, and then you have Daredevil
well
Target.
Worth the time.
You have Daredevil Target, which was supposed to tie in with the Daredevil movie and has still never been finished.
Well, that movie sucks, so I just keep my distance from that anyway.
Well, yeah. That's kind of not the point.
Flanco, you said it was well worth the time, the wait. I mean, is that...
Oh, I was being utterly sarcastic. I was being so sarcastic.
I didn't catch that.
No, yeah,
right.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize. It was not worth the wait. It was
so
not
do you
worth
think
the wait.
I mean, Marvel tends to, like, let things take 2 months, 3 months, you know, between issues.
Delays and stuff.
Yeah,
like
a lot of delays. I mean,
Hang on.
Is that a bad thing?
That's
yes, it's listen, very much a bad thing.
What's going on right now with Civil War is an anomaly. The Kevin Smith thing is, like, none of that stuff was, like, in continuity. Or it's not that it wasn't in continuity, but
actually, it was supposed to be in continuity.
No, I'm not saying it's not in continuity. But let's just say that it never happened, and it hasn't hurt a thing. You know what I mean? It hasn't affected anything, really, you know?
It affected the plans for a character that they plan to do something with that they scrapped.
Black Cat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's a character that's never had her own book or success in any way, shape, or form ever anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, the only reason she would be successful is because Kevin Smith is attached to her, you know,
makes it okay.
Well, what it makes is, I believe that, like, Joe Quesada, Kevin Smith couldn't finish that stuff on time, you know, couldn't finish the Daredevil because I believe the Target stuff came first, right? Daredevil Target stuff came before.
I don't remember which was started first, but it was very around the same amount.
Right. So Daredevil Target doesn't finish, you know what I mean? And it's like
and that involves stuff from the movie,
right?
Stuff they wanted to do with Daredevil as
sure,
well. I mean,
sure,
Daredevil
sure.
and Bullseye.
You know, people were complaining, but I'll tell you who wasn't complaining were all the people that were, like, continuing to buy that book and be, like, really excited about Kevin Smith. And it's like, they followed Kevin Smith, even though, granted, that book would have been way more successful if it would have been on time. But the point is that Kevin Smith draws a lot of readers, so he fucks up on this one book and he's just like, well, I don't want to, like, cut this corner off of, like, one of our most recognizable writers in Marvel Comics right now, which would be Kevin Smith. So he gives him another shot. And yeah, he blew it. You know, he messed it up. I don't see anything else from Kevin Smith coming down the pike, you know, in Marvel Comics.
If it does,
you know there's going to be, like, you know, all kinds of, like, ramifications. Once he signs Kevin Smith to write this book, you know what I mean, it's Kevin Smith's responsibility to get that shit out on time. And, you know, yes, he's a creator, so yes, he's going to let a lot of stuff slide. And yes, you know, he probably let Kevin Smith slide more than he would let most anybody else. But at the same time, it's Kevin Smith. You know what I mean? This is a huge name for comics. A huge name, you know?
You're probably not going to see Kevin Smith jump back into comics, but it's not because Joey Q standing behind him with a ruler going to spank him. It's because of the negative backlash.
Right. Which is something that
he still
that
does happens. Movies.
Instead of, you know, Joe Quesada, like, publicly being like, you know, hey, you need to hurry the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? Or anything like that. You know,
should the customer punish the employee instead of his boss?
Did the customer punish the employee?
That's the reason why Kevin Smith will not return to comics, at least not things that he owns and can do whatever he wants to with. The reason why he's not on board with anything Marvel is not because Joey Q said, I'm not going to use you. It's because the fans said, fuck you. The way that he did his issue.
You don't think that if Kevin Smith came out with a comic book...
I told Kevin Smith, fuck you himself.
I think you're absolutely mistaken. I think if a Kevin Smith book came out tomorrow, that book would be gangbusters. man. That book would be huge. Black People would Cat. Fall for it
the
again.
The end of the Black Cat miniseries Black didn't Cat. Sell.
It's Black Cat.
It's also fucking Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man books don't guarantee like high sales. Not at all. There's like four of them, man. You know what I mean? There's five. There's always a miniseries going on. There's Spider-Man Power Pack. You know, comics. No offense to anybody that reads them. I'm just saying they're not like high sellers because they have Spider-Man in them.
Look at the sales figures for the issues that came out on time and the issues when they sold.
What do you think he should have done? You think after the Daredevil thing, he should have just like ended his relationship with Kevin Smith entirely?
No, I don't have a problem with him going to Kevin Smith again because Daredevil was pretty much on time. But if you're going to hold, my thing with Quesada.
I'm talking about Target, by the way, like not the original Daredevil run, you know, like after Target. Get fucked up. You're saying you wouldn't have given him a chance
things,
after that?
Both those things were pretty much at the same time. So I'm not gonna give one or the other.
You know what? I don't recall that. I don't recall them coming out at the same time.
Well, look it up.
Get up. Tell me what to do.
Well, you're saying you have information about when it came out? Look
I don't
it up
have
prove
any
me wrong.
Information. I said I don't remember them coming out at the same time.
I remember them coming out around the same time. Anyway, if you're gonna give credit for one, if you're gonna give credit for the good, you got to give him credit for the bad. Well, if you're gonna give him credit for signing Kevin Smith.
What's the bad in the Kevin Smith situation? What's the bad? That he didn't crack the whip? That he went to him again?
That it took 2 years for a book to come out?
How is that Joe Quesada's fault?
Okay, he's his boss.
I guess here's my thing,
it's
though.
If
Kevin
you're
Smith...
fired, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's a freelance artist. You know what I'm saying?
Who was contracted to do a job.
So you don't pay the guy.
If Kevin Smith wasn't going to write that story, if he decided he wasn't going to write it, would anybody else have written it? Would anybody have picked up that character and written a story for it?
If the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics offered it to people, I'm sure somebody would have finished it. He's the editor-in-fucking-chief of the comics. Company. Finishing himself. Oh, wait, he can't finish his own books either. My bad.
I'm not going to argue with that.
No argument there.
You don't like this example because you don't view it as the same thing, but all of us have actual jobs. If we didn't do our jobs...
Yes, we do.
I'm including you.
I'm
including you. I'm just saying... You and I have already had this discussion, okay, and you don't like this argument.
I got you.
But we all have real jobs. If we didn't do our jobs for 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 years, there would be ramifications. What the hell? Okay.
Brian's sick, so...
Yeah, I'm sick. There would be consequences for that with our bosses. Kevin Smith got no consequences. His boss didn't take the series away from him. There was nothing to stop him from just continuing not to turn shit in. One of his comics, you know... Years later, it gets finished. The other one's never been finished. Yes, as the boss of Marvel Comics.
But if Kevin Smith is a freelance, if
you still sign a contract,
he signed a contract
to do that.
But it's not like he's exclusively working for Marvel Comics.
Maybe he still needs to turn that work.
If the contract's written in, if the contract's written up so that if Kevin Smith calls up and says, "Hey, I can't get it done this month. Can I get another month?" I mean, if that's in the contract, then. I mean, he's.
Oh, wasn't even. If you read the transcripts that Quesada and Smith themselves have given out, you know, to people to explain the absences and all the things like that, then it wasn't like Kevin Smith was even being in contact with Marvel saying, "I hit a snag and it's going to be this." He just wasn't doing shit. Wasn't returning phone calls, wasn't doing it. Promising new deadlines and not keeping them.
I'm a firm believer if you say you're going to do something by a certain time, you should do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And not only that,
this isn't like a hugely competitive, you know what I'm saying? Like, he tells Kevin Smith to F off, and what does Kevin Smith do?
Probably nothing.
I'll tell you what it is. He goes back to DC, and he makes them a shit ton of money instead. You know, there's no sense in, like...
He goes to DC and doesn't turn in a Batman comic for 2 years.
I mean, the risk is that, you know, he goes to DC and you know, gets his shit together. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't see how, like, you know, cutting him off and kicking him the fuck out is, like, the way to go about handling that job, you know? That's ridiculous.
So he should just get away with anything because he's Kevin Smith.
Man, I don't think it's like that. I don't think it is in terms of, like, you know, you and me pissing off our fucking bosses, you know? It's not like that, man.
I don't view them as being more elevated than the guy that takes out the trash or anything else.
The jobs are just different. Our jobs and their jobs are just different.
Yeah, but he signed a contract to do stuff in a certain amount of time. If he can't do it, then he should have the same consequences.
Which would be what?
The other people.
To be fired and never do it again?
Should have been taken. Never. It isn't in the equation. He was signed to do that particular job. If he can't do it, then he needs to be taken off the book needs to be canceled, something, not drag it out for 2 years. That's bullshit. Same bullshit that Quesada can't make himself do a book that he launched for the same amount of fucking time.
He's got a company to run, man.
Well, then he shouldn't have signed on to do that fucking comic.
That's all right. It sucked anyway.
And, you know, the relay this to Civil War. You're right. It's a very different animal, but it's the same kind of stuff where these creators aren't living up to a time schedule. And this time it's two problems. We have people in Marvel's editorial staff blatantly saying that they made an unrealistic schedule, and that's part of the reason why the comic cannot come out on time. Well, that's a big problem with the editorial staff. They should have made a realistic schedule for the biggest comic event Marvel has ever publicized. And number two, they're saying that the creators are basically, I mean, you said you think Niven's half-assed in some of the art.
Yeah.
The creators have come out saying, well, I couldn't get to it. I was sick, you know. Stuff like that. You know, you have creators getting away with skirting their deadlines and editorial staff that can't make a timeline for the biggest publicized event Marvel has done over Quesada's run. Yeah, he gets blamed for that.
First of all, it's like it was almost on the fly, the entire idea of Civil War. Second of all, barring the lateness of Civil War, I mean, I can't tell you how many people are back in the comics because they've heard stuff about Civil War. So Civil War, like, creatively speaking, was like a phenomenal idea, you know?
All the more reason to have it come out on time.
A success. But I'm saying, like, it was a risk going into it. It was a risk, like, doing all this on the fly. It was a risk changing the course of the Marvel Universe. You know, it was a chance that he took. And yes, people let him down again. You know what I'm saying? People let Joe down. I don't think Joe let people down. You know, Joe was doing what all Joe could do. And, you know, Steve McNiven just buckled under the pressure in every way, shape, or form. You know, I think you throw it all on that kid, man. Does it make Joe look, you know, bad? Yeah, it does. But, like, as far as the editorial staff getting all this stuff, you know, they had it all. You know what I'm saying? They had it all, you know, set up right so that everything was supposed to ship out on time.
According
to them.
According to the editorial staff, they said that the schedule was not going to work regardless.
Cut razor thin, but good Lord, man, you know, tons of stuff has come out, you know? Tons of stuff has come out on time. Tons of people have, like, been able to make Civil War work just fine, you know?
But the problem is when some stuff comes out on time and some doesn't, then you can't follow the story because Marvel, again,
I agree with you, but
Marvel
you're talking
again
about
said,
employees.
Oh, well, if you just buy the series, you'll know what's going on. That's bullshit, too, because you have to buy some tie-ins to really know what's going
but,
on.
But with other things, I mean, you're always going to have where things don't come out all the time. Like, just look at the Wonder Woman's. That's DC, and they're coming out who knows how god often, and I forget what's going
DC,
on there.
DC
and there's
has
a lot
problems
of stories
with lateness,
that,
too, but you also don't see their editorial staff being completely excused from it.
I don't know.
Now, I mean, that's my entire point.
Well, if DC
is if
DC
you're
has,
give him credit for good, you have to give
if
him blame
DC's
for bad.
Having,
what
if
are the
DC's
consequences
having
for
lateness?
Heinberg being late on Wonder Woman?
Nothing. He's Heinberg. He wrote the OC.
What happens if Marvel or Joe starts, like, all right, you're late with this. I'm just, you know, you're gone. Your
so
contract's
why is that a
over.
Heinberg
we'll kick you
issue
out.
And
if
not,
they do that with so many people.
It is an issue. That's my point.
Is that going to be an issue with other, like, when Marvel wants to hire some other people to
they're
come in?
They're going
to
be less likely to
sign
with
them.
Sign
on because,
see,
like,
I don't think that's true.
If I'm not, like, dead on with my time, they're just going to let me go.
Where now, else are they going to go?
To DC?
If they go to DC and DC doesn't Dark put Horse? Up, where are they going to go?
Why do you think they won't put up with it, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you can't put out one project on time, that doesn't mean you can't put out any projects on time. It means you fucked up on that one project, you know? It's not like Steve McNiven's going to, like, get a bunch of shit for putting out Civil War late. Dude, and for some god-awful reason, Wizard Comics said that he was, like, the best artist of the year, and which is just insane to me.
That's
you
Wizard.
Know? But, like, you know, the point is that kid's going to do just fine. You know what I'm saying? And, like, and the idea of the Heinberg situation, are you calling for Dan Didio's head, you know, on this?
I don't like Dan Didio as an editor.
I hate Dan Didio.
Yeah, you know, man, I don't like him as an editor. I'm not singing his praises.
I'm just saying, like,
yes, I think I've said before that I think one if they can't get Wonder Woman to come out every month, they need to put somebody on it who can. Period. Geoff Johns. I love Geoff Johns' work. I read a lot of his issues, but he's writing like 7 comics now, and one of them's coming out on time. That needs to stop. They need to put somebody else on one of those issues so it comes out when it's supposed to come out.
They're paying their creative people enough. I mean, maybe people have to stretch themselves so thin just to make.
Maybe
the,
they're just taking
the
longer, and I mean, but if they're taking longer and they're good. What's the, you know?
I think. Because it should come out on time.
Well, I mean, the Ultimates doesn't come out on time, and every time that issue comes out, you know, like I look back on the Ultimates, and I don't look at it in terms of wow, this took a million years to come out. You know, I look at it in terms of Jesus, this is great.
Yeah, but you read the last Civil War and said on Mike that because it was late, it didn't live up to it being late.
It didn't live up to it being late because, you know, it was the quality diminished. The quality doesn't diminish on the Ultimates. The quality diminishes on Civil War.
So I mean, it depends on who it is.
So that's why you should probably buy trades. Because then you have to worry about time. And you don't get the ads. I mean, you're dealing with creative people. I mean, me a lot I'm an art of director in my people. Day job.
Right.
And I have like 7 people I have to manage, and I've got this children's book I have to illustrate, and it's been in the works for months. And it's just hard to make time for that book because I've got to like run 2 departments and manage 7 people. And I understand why, you know, creative teams late on stuff. I mean, if they've got a couple other things they're working on, maybe they're working on stuff that's not comics related. Cause Tommy Lee Edwards, he does a shitload of stuff for Lucasfilm, I think his own personal stuff, movie studios. I think he's done stuff for Harry Potter, the movies and some other stuff. So he stretches himself pretty thin, but he sticks to a timeline. He tells you if he's going to do a book, he says it takes him 10 weeks to do one issue.
Look at all the creators that put their stuff out on time. So,
but maybe they're just doing one book.
Well, then the people who are doing multiple books and
it's not like they're whipping out widgets on time. Here.
Maybe they should do less books.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, when you're dealing with creative people, some people just take longer, or that you get into a slump where you're not feeling creative. You don't feel like drawing. You don't feel like coloring or writing, or just the shit's not coming to you.
You have all sorts of ways to get around problems like that. If it's a limited series, things of that nature, why not have it done before you start releasing it, before you publicize it, especially if you have a creator that has a history of having problems. If it's a monthly and you have a guy that has a history or a problem with doing stuff like that, why give them a monthly? Why not have it 5 or so issues?
Every single case that you've mentioned thus far has been people that don't have histories, in comics at all. Kevin Smith, Alan Heinberg, neither of those guys have histories in comics.
Kevin Smith did Daredevil and Green Arrow pretty much.
That's not like a career by any, that's not like, obviously it's not a gauge of what Kevin Smith is able to be capable of on a timetable, you know what I'm saying?
And when he did that stuff, I mean, it's not like comic news was running rampant on the internet. When did he do Daredevil? 5-6 years ago?
Closer to 8 or 9. It was,
I don't remember. It was
98.
It was around
98 is when he started
issues.
It was before the movie.
If there were problems with him doing those issues, I mean, people probably just didn't know about it. I mean, maybe it took him 3 years to get those done. But you don't know because they came out and you didn't know about them before they came out.
It was in a monthly, and it's, as I recall, it seems like Daredevil and Green Arrow both came out when they were supposed to come out because it was in the confines of their regular monthly issues. I guess the reason why I have a bigger problem with it is because so many people want to make it like it's no issue. So that makes me want to make it more of an issue because people are just, I don't care. Well, you should care.
Right. So are you saying that's Joe's fault then?
I'm saying as editor-in-chief, every buck in that comic book publishing company starts and stops with him.
I mean, do you think anything has happened that should cost Joe Quesada his job?
No, considering that's everything, not the point. I'm not
then what is
yelling
it?
For his head well, being
what,
fired.
What do you think should happen?
I think that he should get the good with the bad. That's my entire point. If you're going to sing his praises, there's negatives too.
So for you, the majority of this conversation has seemed, for you, the bad is just things on time and everything else. I mean, is that the main thing? Is just things not coming in on time?
The control? You think the guy doesn't have control of his company?
I mean, because that's mainly it, right? Everything else you've said has been pretty good.
Some of the stuff...
Because it seems to me like every company has issues with time, and it might just be something about what it takes to manage a large comic company. Is there's going to be time issues here and there. Everybody seems to have problems with time.
Sure.
And he can't be an amazing, better than everybody else. I mean, I can expect him to do as good as the other companies, but I can't expect him to make a company where all the comics come in on time when other companies can't even do it.
Well, my issues, the issues with the ones that we're discussing, those were huge issues, either because the problem was so big or because the event itself was so big. Other companies are going to have timing issues, sure, but their biggest crossover event they've done in decades, events that took 2 years to get finished. The reason why we're focusing on those is because they're such big issues. Other stuff with Quesada, just some of his anti-fanboy rhetoric. I mean, that is his fan base. Those are the people that, whether anybody who wants to be pro-creator believes it or not, those are the people that are paying their bills. And some of that stuff just gets on my nerves.
He doesn't take any shit, man. I think it's funny. I think it's great.
Why should fans take shit from him, then?
They don't take shit from him. But he does. He's never fucking insulting or mean. He doesn't. I mean, saying that Joe Quesada is the reason that this stuff is late is crazy. I disagree with that. He is not the reason this stuff is late. You know, he has
no responsibility for it whatsoever.
I didn't say he has no responsibility whatsoever. I'm saying that he does have some, but like not another. Let me ask you this. Well, let me. Can we just talk about something else, right quick? Sure. Just something about Joe Quesada that I also really dug. You were talking about trade paperbacks and stuff. Right. Joe Quesada was really sort of before Joe Quesada. You know, sort of Marvel MO was put out trades of stuff. You know, that was hard to find, or you know what I mean, or like years after something had come out. And Joe Quesada took a very aggressive stance in putting out trades like. Almost as soon as a run was done, it was collected in a trade and put out. You know,
if it was something that was popular,
right? Yeah, you know, and getting that stuff into bookstore, you know, and the trade format being like a non-collectible, which is one of my favorite things about it. You know what I mean? Is that they're reprint, so there is no collectability in trade paperbacks and stuff, which is just phenomenal. But it's Joe's really like. Being out there pushing trade paperbacks, and you know, I think there's a lot of controversy as far as some people feel like it's going to hurt like retailers' monthlies. You know, the idea that eventually monthly pamphlets are going to be phased out of comic books. I, you know, as working at a comic book store, I'm you know kind of in between as far as like you know how I feel about that stuff. But you know, I love trade paperbacks, and I think Joe Quesada has been. I think that's been. A really great something that I'm proud of Joe Quesada for. You know, I think that the trade paperbacks are just a great way to get people into comics, a great way to display comics. It's a great way to like, you know, and not for nothing, it's a great way to promote comics, putting them in Walden's, putting them in Books a Million, putting them in, you know, bookstores. You know, they don't want to carry pamphlets. You know, they don't want to like look through all this shit and, you know, whatever. It's something else Joe Quesada has done to help the industry in general. And, you know, and other companies, you know, have had to follow suit. The companies have also had to be like aggressive about their trade paperbacks and whatnot. You know, I think it's only a good thing. I mean, I think it's another example of how the guy like thinks progressively.
I think the trade paperback medium is always going to depend like on who you talk to, because there'll be people who will say this is the death of comics, and then there's people who say that's great, I'd rather have the trades bring them on. I think it's progressive, and like you said, the more people, when you get it in the different bookstores and different stores, the more people that can see it, the more people who have access to it, because the weekly comics as a form, there's a lot of people that won't see those, so they don't have the same access. I mean, I know a lot of people that don't have a local comic book store that they can go in and get stuff, but they can get trades at a lot of places.
I wanted to say that, you know, when I was younger, when I was 90s, early 90s, that's when I was reading comics.
And you were in your early 90s?
In the early 90s when I was a little younger. That's when I was reading comics, and that's also when I stopped reading comics because I lived near a comic store I could always walk to, and then I moved and I didn't live near it anymore. Huh. But I'd stopped reading comics, and what got me back here where I am today, not only reading comics and buying weekly comics, but doing a comic podcast, is buying trades at bookstores and going, God, I really miss these characters. I wonder what's going on with them now. Yeah. And that's really what pulled me back into comics was trades.
I really like, I agree with that. I think people who want to support the medium will do and like both. You know, there'll be things that they want to read on a monthly basis, and then there'll be trades that they'd rather, like, example I'll give is Invincible. I really like that book. I've never bought a single issue of it. All of it I've read is by trade. And then there's certain things that I have to have every month that I've never bought a trade for. And I think people who want to support the medium will do both. They'll buy both.
That's what I do.
Did we already talk about ads and comics?
We touched on it, but we haven't delved.
We really need
to. All right, well, let me ask this question to Brian specifically. No offense.
But do you think as editor-in-chief, he's responsible for ads?
Thank you, Adam, for asking.
I mean, or is he responsible for the content of the comic written as is?
You think he's responsible for the ads?
I would be.
Because he's not like, is there a president? Is there a president?
It would be hard for me to believe.
Because I don't think he's a businessman. I think he's a comic manager, a writer, creator manager.
It would be hard for me to believe that a man with his stroke, who is given the face of Marvel Comics, would have no input if he wanted to say something about ads. I find it very hard to believe that if Joe Quesada went into somebody's office and said, I'd like to talk to you about the ads, he'd say, get the hell out of here, pizza boy.
Is Marvel Comics, is it like publicly traded? Does it have like stockholders or anything? Because, God. They are going to have a lot of power when it comes to like ads, and Joe Quesada's not going to have dick for shit.
I don't think anyone's like, going to tell Joe Quesada to F off, but I think they will tell him, you know, no.
And you don't so you think he has no power whatsoever? He's done all these other things, but he has no power over that.
Joe Quesada can, like, I do not think it is his call to reduce or increase the number of ads in a monthly Marvel comic.
Okay,
no,
so if he's
I don't think it's one of his responsibilities. Joe Quesada is exactly, he's, you know, the editor in chief. You know what I mean? That is a creative position.
Marvel is a multi-million dollar company, and Joe Quesada answers to people. He doesn't make the final decisions.
But as this creative force that people want to give him credit for, he shouldn't have anything to say about, wow, we have more ads than we do.
I'm sure he has plenty of opinions on stuff.
But I'm sure,
I've heard Joe Quesada talk about how he like hates the idea of exclusive contracts and would rather everyone be freelance. But it's like, that's the company, that, you know, that's the business that they live in these days, are exclusive contracts. It sucks. He thinks it sucks, but he does it because he has to compete, you know?
I haven't heard him come out and say anything about all the ads then, even though Marvel's under fire for it. I haven't heard him say anything. Maybe he doesn't have an opinion.
I doubt that. I mean, I can't put words in the man's mouth, but I'll
shoot him an email.
As
he says he tends to respond to 90% of his emails.
I feel like, you know, as sure as you are that Joe Quesada like does have some say in it, I feel like I'm just as sure that he doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think he does either.
You don't think he has any say?
No, I'm not saying any say. I don't think he has
any say. I think he has a say.
You know, hey, let's hear what you have to say. Okay, now let's make our decision.
Seriously.
You know? No.
I'm not
trying to be redundant.
I'm not stamping some sort of label of blame on Quesada's forehead for the ads.
Sounds like
it. But to say that, I mean, I haven't said that, but to say that he has that, it doesn't have anything to do with him? Yes, it does.
Well, did we like specify what the problem with ads are?
Would you pay more money for a comic if it had less ads in it?
Yeah, because prestige format stuff that you buy, you pay more money for those, and I like those better because they have less ads.
Well, I know I've said this before, but we're talking about the single most...
Which equals about the same, huh?
The biggest comic book company on the planet Earth. You know what I'm saying? We are talking about the biggest money-making machine in comic books. Joe Quesada being, you know, no other company, I think, would have as much trouble as Marvel as far as, like, you know, considering how much money they make. We've said this before, that, you know, if you really don't like comics with ads in them, you know what I mean? Don't buy Marvel comics.
Right.
I'm not trying to be a dick, but, like, comics are bigger than Marvel. You know, you do have to pay more for independent comics that don't have ads. You know, generally they're going to be about $4, you know, and it's, you know, it's literally the price you pay for paying $3 for a 22 page Marvel comic.
I think
is reading all those ads.
I think the thing that you, I think I'm not discrediting that statement, but the reason why it doesn't always work with comics is because so many people involved with comics buy things for characters. And if you want to read Spider-Man, you can't buy Image Comics to get it.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for those people. You know what I mean? I can't speak for someone that would buy a Spider-Man comic, no matter what was in it or who was writing it or who was drawing it.
Looking for quality. But if you have an affinity for that character, there's only one company you can get it from.
I just want to rein this in a little, guys. Sorry. Just kind of move this. Anyway.
Hey.
And again, the show takes a turn.
No, I just want to kind of bring back the things like Joe Quesada. Just another thing that I read that seems like most people aren't really familiar with that even occurred is Joe Quesada cutting out smoking with his heroes and removing smoking from comic books. Marvel comic books, heroes don't smoke. That's a very positive thing in my opinion.
Fury, Wolverine, and Punisher, no one smokes anymore.
When Adam mentioned this earlier, I hadn't even noticed Fury and Wolverine.
I hadn't noticed it either.
I mean, you know.
But I read it, so it must
that's
be
true. Important. You know, way to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of those things where it's, if that's your morality,
right?
Then you think that's great. If it's not, then you either go, I don't care, or you say, why are they preaching their morality?
Yeah, I like smoking.
Yeah.
They're not preaching it. They don't even mention it.
Well, by completely doing away with it, they are. If they live in a universe where nobody smokes.
Now, I think that's right. New York City, nobody smokes. So,
yeah,
I mean,
excuse me, New York City, nobody does.
That's pretty realistic to the comic world anyway.
Moon and Atlanta.
Since most comics seem to take place in New York, and since smoking's banned pretty much everywhere in New York. Yeah. Banning bars and all sorts. They just banned trans.
Let me ask you this, Brian. If you had to give Joe Quesada's reign as editor in chief a grade,
not including creating Origins,
I think it's an incredible success.
What grade would you give it?
What kind of scale are we on? A, B, C, D?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
No pluses or minuses.
No pluses or minuses.
No, get pluses or minuses.
Oh, good God. All right, fine. Pluses.
You have to do like numbers.
Yeah,
he's an 89. I think he gives an A. I think Marvel is consistently the biggest publisher every month. They're outdoing DC at the moment at every turn. It's all relative because it'll come back around again at some point. You know, Marvel's been down, DC's been up, DC's been down, Marvel's been up. I mean, it's a sliding thing. But Marvel's consistently hitting a lot of creative home runs right now. And as an editor-in-chief, you have to give him props for that.
I'd give him a B+. The reason I would give him a B+ is he doesn't put out his own stuff on time.
I mean, all criticisms aside, I mean, it sounds like I'm completely want to egg the guy's house.
Yeah.
And it's not like that.
No, yeah, I'm actually a little shocked. I don't know what else to say.
I'm more interested in Marvel Comics now than I have been ever.
I agree.
And I think that he and his editorial staff, for the vast majority, is doing a great job. Again, my thing is, say the good stuff, say the bad stuff.
You know, maybe he puts out a ton of stuff on time. Maybe he's done stuff and he's put it out ahead of schedule, but I mean, that's not what makes the news. No one talks about that.
I mean, the stuff with creators, you can certainly tie him with Bendis and the ability to keep Bendis at Marvel and keep him interested, because that's definitely his workhorse. But pretty much anybody else has been traded back and forth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think you can give somebody credit for having this creator, that creator, great creators, because both of the big companies, have big names. A lot of times they're going back and forth. I mean, like, you gave him credit for Grant Morrison on X-Men. Grant went right back to DC when he had other DC stuff to do.
Well, they paid him plenty to come to DC.
Yes. I'm sure Jeff Loeb's got a real healthy check from Marvel for leaving DC, too. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's all relative. Creators are relative. It's the other stuff you have to focus on.
Sounds good.
So, Chris, how long do you think you're going to give this?
Yeah, prediction. No weeks. 0 weeks. 0 weeks.
I'd like everybody to maybe comment in on this one, on what their guesses are. We'll take him. Maybe we'll set up a poll on how long Chris can go without buying weeklies.
I don't know. It might end on Wednesday. Just need more money, so if anybody wants to donate.
Donate to the dollar bin.
Yeah, if anybody would like to make donations to the dollar bin.
2757 Rosewood Drive. I'll be accepting cash.
So following up on this Joe Quesada discussion, sort of, I have a few questions that I wrote, as I always do. I write some questions. And we're going to discuss quick answers. I'm going to shoot these out to the group. We're not going to do the roundabout thing. It takes too much. First question. Is Joe Quesada overrated simply because he's Hispanic?
No.
Sí.
Dos.
Okay, moving on. Okay, there are a lot of Spider-Man, Batman, Superman titles out there that are floating around.
Okay.
Should there be that many, or should they try something else? Like, instead of writing all these lines, should they just write another character or just cut back? Or is it okay that there's this many?
I always think that you shouldn't oversaturate with the characters. I mean, Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, those are big enough characters that you want to give fans a couple of different looks at it. So if they don't like the team that's on Amazing Spider-Man, maybe they'll like Spectacular. Once you get past like three, then I think, yeah, they should probably be doing something else.
I think there should just be one. Do I have to explain?
Is that two?
Yes. That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
I think it's saturated. It's oversaturated. Yeah. I think it'd just be easier to keep up with if it's just one title. But I don't know. You want to make more money. You want to just get more stories out. I understand. It's just, I guess as a collector, it kind of sucks because I can't collect everything. Right. And, you know, I guess I've learned to accept it.
I just realized last week that I had 4 Batman titles in my folder, and that just frightened me. So I'm going to start cutting those back. I just can't do it.
Brian said earlier that there's 3 Superman books that, he said there's 2, but there actually are 3 Superman books that are worth reading. There are at least 2 Batman books that are worth reading. There are no Spider-Man books worth reading. No, it's not true. Ultimate Spider-Man is actually really good. But, I mean, they're here to stay. They're, you know, they're just, it's like Brian said, people follow characters. You know, there's a large portion of the comic book, you know, fan base that follows characters and not creators, or, you know, demand good stories. They just want their fill. Yeah, whether you like it or not, they're going to be here forever, so get used to it.
All right, this might not apply to everybody, but if you could only buy one of, and I'm going to name some lines, which one would it be? Batman.
Right now? Batman.
Batman.
Grant Morrison's Batman.
Yeah.
I would say Batman.
Detective is close behind.
I mean, if Morrison, if it was this month's past issue,
yeah, no,
Detective,
yeah,
because I like Paul, I like the creative team on that. But I've been buying Batman regularly, you know, for a couple of years, so it'd be Batman.
Superman.
All-Star.
All-Star.
Yeah, when it comes out, All-Star.
What about that new action run?
Action's worth a mention, though.
Okay. Yeah. For me, I pretty much all... I don't know. If this Confidential keeps up, I might... But All-Star is great. All-Star is great. Spider-Man, nothing out there,
Ultimate. Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate.
Amazing. Yeah.
Really? I would say Ultimate myself, but I don't really read any Spider-Man anyway, except for the Civil War tie-ins. That's all I've been reading, Spider-Man.
But that's why I picked Amazing, is because... Yeah. If you want to know what's going on with him in Civil War, you have to read Amazing Spider-Man.
Wolverine?
Zero.
Astonishing X-Men.
Astonishing X-Men, good point, yeah.
That's what X-Men. I was fishing for. Fuck, you passed it
I
up.
I know, I suck.
Astonishing.
2 points to Brian, way to go.
Next week, I just want to throw in next week. Next week, everybody's going to get a comic from the Dollar Bin. And instead of doing this whole question thing, and instead of doing the beginning, next week we're going to just discuss each of our Dollar Bin questions that we picked up.
Yeah, Adam randomly picked 4 issues randomly out of picked. Our, not our dollar bin, our 3 for a dollar bin.
So, I put mine back.
Bottom of the barrel.
We're going to make Chris read it. Try to talk about this stuff. And if I can.
Mine sucked really bad.
We can do it without vomiting. That would be awesome.
I already put mine back. Okay.
Breed by Clive Barker.
What do you guys own in trade, and why do you own it in trade?
I mentioned during the podcast that Invincible, I've only picked it up on trade. Just by word of mouth, and I've continued to just read it that way. I really like it. Astonishing X-Men. I actually didn't start buying that series in a monthly because I didn't give a crap about the guy from Buffy, but picked up the first 2 trades, and now I'm buying it monthly because of that. JSA was the same way. I started it by picking up trades during John's run, and have most of my JSA collection is trades, not monthly.
Yeah, I don't have many like runs that are all... trades. A lot of it is like half trade, and then I catch up and then jump onto the regular book. Starman's like that, Preacher's like that for me. But a lot of the books that I do pick up and trade are like independent books, where like, you know, the Dan Close stuff, you know, the Chris Ware Acme
Savage novelty Dragon, Lattie,
right? Yeah, Spot exactly. That was Brian. Those last 3 were Brian. But a lot of the independent stuff that I just wasn't available to me when I read it, I picked that stuff up and trade because
I really don't have a lot of trades. The one that's I guess kind of close to my heart is the Incredible Hulk Ground Zero with McFarlane. He drew it. I don't know who wrote it. It's old, but it's the first trade I ever bought. And
but some of the first McFarlane stuff in Marvel,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, with Hulk and Wolverine, that classic cover. Wolverine,
oh yeah,
on the
that
Hulk.
Is badass cover.
Oh, okay,
yeah. You can see what the Hulk's reflection in his claws. It's just, but not that it was like the most awesome Hulk cover. Wolverine story
and
ever read.
They've
redone
it in different ways like 87 times by now.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is how you know something that's really classic,
right?
Because people continue to try to copy it.
Yeah, best thing Tom McFarlane ever drew.
The only trade stuff I have is same thing. I buy trades when I'm way behind. Like I own all the Preachers in trade. You know, I just. Because I bought them after they were done. I own the majority of Why the Last Man's in trade because I jumped on so late, and I'm just going to continue to buy those in trade.
I appreciate that, Adam. I just want you to know that.
You're the one that got me reading that, actually.
Well, you're the one who let me read them all. I think
that's
I got
true.
You
I
that
did.
First one that you let me
you
borrow
pointed
them
that
all
out
and
to
finally
me.
Got caught up.
You
says,
buy this so I can yeah. borrow
And a lot of the other Ex Machina. That's a lot of stuff I've been holding out in trade, but usually if I'm behind is when I buy things in trade. It's easier. Thank God for trades. Otherwise, I'd miss out on a lot.
You know, I have mentioned on the show before that I've got the Runaways and Batman Hush on trade, mm-hmm. but I've got the oversized. So, yeah.
Did Hush oversized too?
Yeah, it's nice. It's big. It's awesome. Hard. It's like hardcover inside of like a nice hard case. And yeah, oversized books are awesome.
To wrap this up, I just want to know, who is the steadiest creator that you guys are picking up?
That's still doing comics right now.
Current, yeah.
Are you talking steady as far as...
Monthly books?
Well, in your pickups, who is steadiest in your pickups?
Warren Ellis, I don't think, has ever let me down, ever.
I guess mine would be Brian Wood, because I don't miss an issue of DMZ.
That's a good call.
Everything else, I just kind of jump around. I don't stick to a lot of stuff.
My answer would have to be Ellis, too, because if it comes out and Ellis wrote it, I buy it, so.
I'm probably going to go with Grant Morrison, in that I haven't thought some of his stuff as spectacular as other people's, but it's always solid. I always like reading it.
And when he's good, he's one of the best ever.
Yeah. I make an amendment to that. Brad Metzler, from Identity Crisis to his run on JLA, it's been great stuff.
Even it's only been really like 15 issues, though. I mean, really, it is very solid. It is solid, but like, you know.
I put him underneath Morrison as far as somebody, as soon as I see their name on a title, I want to check it out.
Yeah, I heard that.
All right. So if it comes out, we'll be picking some of this stuff up. New Comics Days next Wednesday. You can always pick up your stuff here at Acme Comics at
2757 Rosewood Drive, Columbia, South Carolina, 29205.
And if you need to reach us by phone, you can call us at 803-771-2757.
Adam's on the ball.
Sweet.
And I have a question I want to pose to all of our listeners.
Yes.
And I just forgot it.
All three of you.
Awesome.
Damn it. No, there were actually 28 this week. Woo! One day we had 28 listeners. Now, some of those are like some search engines, Google, whatever, but...
Hey, listeners.
Yeah, I forgot my question.
I really like to thank you guys for listening. I would, if anybody could leave some comments, that would be great. It feels good when Chris tells us how many people are listening, but we're here to interact with you. We'll do better if we can interact with an audience.
Yeah, even if you just want to say, you suck!
Yeah.
That's fine.
Leaving
you can tell Brian that, not me. I've got low self-esteem.
I have no interest in talking to any of you, so stay away from me.
Such an elitist.
But
I'm just better than everyone.
Even if you don't leave a comment, thanks for listening. And we will catch up with you next week.
What's the question this week? What's the topic?
Oh, we're going to talk about Joe Quesada. We're going to talk about Big Joe, man.
What is that? Don't tell me you're hating on Big Joey Q, man.
No, man. He is just like, he's responsible for putting Straczynski on Spider-Man.
Dude.
And Spider-Man sucks balls.
Let me tell you something. That was a good idea at first. Straczynski was a good idea at first. And the first like,
good start.
Now, but that's Straczynski's fault.
No,
not Joe.
Don't give me that face.
He hires that guy for the job. And he's like, here. You know, and the first couple of issues, he's like, all right. You know, and then the guy starts sticking up the joint. What's he going to do? Like, take him off the book? You know how many, like, Babylon 5 Flacco, fans, like, read J. Michael's
You give him a miniseries. All right. You give him a miniseries. Don't give him an ongoing. All right. He doesn't have the you know...
I agree with you, man. The guy, like, can't pick up steam. And I'm not really going to that for J. Michael Straczynski. Like, honestly, I'm not. But I do think that Joe Quesada has brought in so much good stuff, way more good stuff than bad stuff. And the bad stuff that has happened, I don't think has been, like, you know, his fault. He's always had, like, the best of intentions and, like, been new and innovative and brought new faces to Marvel Comics.
You gotta give him credit for the good. Gotta give him credit for the bad.
No, that's not even true, man, because all the bad stuff isn't his fault.
What I'm loving is gone.
BMB being a great writer is his creation. I birthed him.
I'm not saying that.
How about Vaughn? Vaughn is doing a great job on Doctor Strange. Have you guys been reading?
Hey, Vaughn's hit or miss, man. I think Runaways is, like, a pretty subpar book.
Nope. Well, no, because he's been writing some, like, you know, Doctor Strange, a lot of the...
about his run on Ultimate X-Men?
I haven't read any of those.
It was okay.
But his 616...
616, is it you? Were you the 616?
Yeah, we're talking about dude.
I just say keep Vaughn away from superheroes, and I'm happy with him.
For some reason.
Yeah. No, it's interpretation of the 616 characters, right on, dead on.
I don't see Doctor Strange as a superhero.
So I think you should put him on as Spider-Man, because he's written a Spider-Man miniseries.
I mean, Vaughn is capable of some awesome stuff. Don't get me wrong, man. I do like Brian K. Vaughn. I'm just saying that, like,
Chris is going to go wait on customers.
He's hit or miss. That's all I'm saying. I don't think Vaughn is, you know, a money shot every single time.
I just say keep him away from superheroes, and I love him.
I just call
him
say you good. Don't think he's a money shot every time.
Hey,
who do you think should write Spider-Man right now?
Who do I think should write Spider-Man?
If you were in Joe Quesada's place, with the whole topic,
that's a good question. I'd give it to Brian Michael Bendis. Yeah, dude.
No.
Doesn't he have enough on his
write everything in the Marvel universe?
Dude, he is a Spider-Man genius. Anytime the joke that Brian Michael Bendis writes Spider-Man, he is always the most entertaining character on the fucking page. In New Avengers, the reason why, like, Spider-Man works in New Avengers is because he is the funniest character there by far. You know,
he's funny because of his discomfort.
Boy, he's funny because Brian Michael Bendis is funny. Because I've heard, you know,
I wasn't arguing.
All right,
I was making a point. I'm just saying that's why he's funny. That's why it's good.
There's plenty of lame Spider-Man that isn't funny. You know what I mean?
Well,
I think
Jeff
Johns
should handle it
because,
like, his interpretation of of the villains, like with the Flash, his Flash run, how he brought, like, character and more life to the villains.
Yeah, his stuff on Marvel is always, like, pretty underwhelming.
You should
I think.
Read his The Thing miniseries for the
No, I will not.
You know,
I
like
not
thing?
Do that.
No,
is that the one with Scott Collins? Scott Collins drew it. It was like him and the it was the guys who did the Flash the thing.
What's wrong with that? You don't.
No. I've never been a thing kind of guy.
You don't like the
also
ever
something
blue
that
loving
needs to stay
thing?
In, but used completely out of context.
I guess.